So why are we here, Mike?
I think we're here to start a podcast.
Treats are working. You brought down a whole Costco-sized thing of cat treats.
Yeah.
And you're keeping Brian sort of on the straight and narrow this morning. Just giving him a treat every once in a while. Keep him settled.
Yeah, he's not really attacking anybody. He's doing a good job today. He's been lingering around the whole time.
Yeah, hanging out, not eating wires.
Yeah.
Not trying to jump over computers.
He's doing a good job. So what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I don't know,
been doing anything fun? Got any plans for the future?
You know what? One thing I did think about a couple episodes we got, I can't even remember why this came up, but I think maybe we were talking about some other comedian in the scene, and you had mentioned, you know, like, you get up and you think you got your 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and you get up and just immediately you know that this is just going to bomb.
Right.
Do you remember having specifically one of those sets?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you remember the jokes that you were trying to tell?
I think it was the first time I ever hosted a show. It was pretty new, but I had this idea that I was in a small town called Lone Tree.
Mm, just south of Iowa City.
Yeah. And so I wrote some Lone Tree-specific jokes.
Oh, boy.
And I made a joke about something about the, you know, there's a lot of trees. It was really bad. But I said, you know, this is the Lone Tree that you guys hang people from or something.
Oh, geez.
And, oof. I was very new at comedy at the time.
But yeah, like when you're doing it and you're like, oh, you make fun of the place that you're in. That's
right.
that's a guaranteed laugh.
Yeah, no, they didn't like it. And then pretty much that set the tone for everything else.
Oh,
they were like,
yeah.
We're not.
Yeah.
Some woman in the back yelled, you suck. And I was like, yeah, I agree.
Okay. I said Brian was not trying to jump over computers, but I spoke too soon.
Yeah. Come on, you dong. Knock it off.
There's a guy who runs a homeless shelter in the Chicago area, and he does a bunch of, like, training videos.
Mm-hmm.
So he talks, and especially for, like, libraries, but, you know, for people who are working with homeless folks. But he talks about having pennies in the cup. And so basically his idea is, you know, you build up these relationships over time, and like, you know, just by saying hi to somebody, by calling them by their name, asking them how they're doing, mm-hmm. right? Like, you're building up, like, this rapport.
Yeah.
And then so when things go bad, right, like, you have pennies in the cup that you can then spend, and when you have to say, hey, I need you to leave for the day because you did this or whatever. If you have that relationship, then that exchange is going to go much better. But then, so when you said, like, yeah, you start out bad, made me think of that. Like,
yeah.
You're putting no pennies in the cup right off the bat.
Right.
And so you have no rapport with the audience, and they're going to let you know that immediately.
Yeah, I've learned a lot since those days. Do you remember the joke that I had last night when I started out, which actually happened? Went to a Casey's, and the guy behind the counter goes, do you want to round up for the local schools? And I just, like, it's just a reaction to just go, no, thanks, man. Because, like, everybody wants you to round up or something.
Right.
I just go, no, thanks. And he goes, yeah, fuck them kids.
Which is, that's funnier than anything I will ever say on stage.
And that really happened.
Remember when Studio 13 used to do their open mics, think on Thursday nights or something?
Yeah.
So, like, I've been, you know, at it for maybe a year or two, and I was like, I'm just going to write a whole set about, like, veteran jokes.
Mm.
And I just got up, and I had, like, 5 minutes about being a vet, and I just started, and I got one joke in. I'm like, oh, nothing, just dead air. And there's hardly anybody in there to begin with,
right.
So it just didn't feel good. And then I did another one, nothing.
Yeah.
One more, nothing. I'm like, oh, this is bad. Yeah. It's like the only time I've ever just like walked off stage. I'm just like, I'm done. This is just going to be miserable for all of us for the next 2 minutes if I try to stick this out.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Luckily, that hasn't happened to me a ton, but... Well, I guess I was hosting the open mic last week, and it was sort of like that. I got up and did a joke, and just nothing. Nothing.
It was a weird night.
Oh, it's like, oh, this fucking feels terrible. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to do my jokes that I know work, always work. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
I did on Friday night, I did a joke that is really old, and I stopped doing it. I did it during the hot minute part, and that's only because I used to do it, and there's a guy who used to, he comes around, does comedy, doesn't do it a lot anymore, but he used to, and he came up to me once and said, you know, I just wanted you to know that Louis C.K. has a joke like that, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I listen to Louis C.K.'s, and I listen to mine, I'm like, that's totally not the same joke, but whatever. And then, so I told the joke, I was telling the joke still, and he came up to me again, and he goes, you're still doing that Louis C.K. joke? I'm like, Louis C.K. joke? So I told it again, because he was there.
I haven't told this the ice water one?
No, the one about the coal miner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, people are weird.
It was just funny, because, like, for whatever reason, I don't think he meant anything bad by it. I think he was, like, trying to be helpful, but, like... Yeah. And for some reason, I got offended by the fact that he was trying to help me out. Right. Like, I don't want to hear it. Right. It's not the same joke. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. I had that moment with somebody during the competition. So the person during the competition was doing really well. And then they just finished with this joke that, like, I did not understand. Like, I did not understand the premise.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't understand the arc of the joke. I didn't understand anything connected.
Right.
And so I said that to them. And he just goes, everybody else loved it. Like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. Sorry I said anything. Yeah. We do not have a clarifications and corrections segment. Sorry, Big Grove.
But we'll still mention Big Grove. We also don't have any heavy metal factoids from Brad.
We don't ask a lot. We don't ask for money.
One factoid a week.
Yeah, we don't. That's it. Like, he could do 1,000 factoids at a, like...
Yeah, without even thinking about it, probably.
Just... How hard is it? Just talk to text.
Yeah. I heard somebody posted something the other day, and it sort of struck me. They said that they thought maybe the song Nothing Compares to You is cursed.
Oh.
Because Prince is dead. Sinead O'Connor's dead. Yeah. Chris Cornell's dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All from...
having sung that song.
Well, and it wasn't from natural causes. Any of them doesn't sound like so.
Sinead O'Connor's version of Nothing Compares to You is probably my favorite performance in rock history.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. That song kills me every time.
It's like, a really great
without
song.
Without fail.
Yeah, it's a great song. She does a really good job. We did name that tune the other night.
You went down to Shakespeare?
Yeah, and they had a round that was Prince songs written by Prince performed by other people.
Mm.
We got 18 out of 20.
Wow.
I really pulled one out of the out of thin air. Do you know who Tevin Campbell is?
No.
Me either, but that's the name I guessed, and it was right.
What?
I mean, I the name is familiar.
You had heard it somewhere at some point, obviously.
Somewhere it was stuck in the back of my brain.
Gee, that's wild.
Yeah. My wife is like, I just trust you on those ones, because, like, you can, you'll just pull them out of nowhere sometimes.
Oh, man, jeez. I think I might have, so I used to host a lot of trivia in Cedar Rapids, and I think I might have done a round of, like, songs that Prince had written that other people performed, because there are so many, and good ones, like big ones.
Yeah. Manic Monday.
Nutty.
Sugar Walls by Sheena Easton.
Who was it? What was it?
Sugar Walls.
Oh, I don't know that one.
All kinds of them.
He was a madman.
Yeah. He lived in his studio. Just get up in the middle of the night and felt like it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Just play some drums.
Yeah.
Wake up the next morning and be like, oh, those are pretty good drums I played last night.
Yeah.
Let's just make another song.
Yeah. Let's make it happen.
All right. Should we get to it?
Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Hey, welcome to Wes and Mike Waste Time Watching TV, Season 5, Episode 10. Tenor. Can you give me a tenor?
Yeah. And if you show me your milkers. Show me your milkers.
All right. So we were doing The British Office. This is season 2, episode
4
of The British Office.
Title, Motivation.
Yes. Oh, God.
Motivation.
This one.
We get to see David dressed as a normal person as opposed to in a suit, and it's worse. Yes.
I think I made a note somewhere where David is ramping up. And so each episode is like David being more and more
David
of an exaggerated version of whatever this is.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Here we go, Brian.
Chord playing time.
Not today, Brian.
Oh, there are more chords to play with, I promise you that.
Just not as loud as these ones. All right, let's get started. Tim and Rachel are in a hallway, and they're sort of like flirting around and up close with each other.
They're just on each other.
Yeah, I don't remember ever doing that at a place where I worked, but I don't think it would be acceptable.
No.
Especially if you were married, maybe you could get away with a smooch or something. But
yeah, again, I think this is 20 years ago, and so the world has changed.
I guess
quite a bit in the last 20 years, I would say, especially mm-hmm. around stuff like that.
Yeah,
but also I try to figure this out to some degree. You know, the physical touch, whether British people were more likely to be engaged in physical touch, and they're not.
Right.
Is this what actual British workplaces look like or English workplaces look like? I have no idea.
Mm. Seems unlikely. But so they're just flirting around, sort of smooching, or not smooching, but necking a little bit. Yeah, and Dawn walks by super awkwardly.
And she has kind of twist her body to get by them, right?
Yeah, and she has this look on her face she wants to die. So, and then David walks up to Don's desk, and he's got that leather coat on again. And now he's wearing a hoop earring.
Yes.
He's like, another day, another dollar. Any mail? She's like, is that an earring? He goes, whatever, get over it. He's like trying to be real cool. She goes, how long have you had that? He's like, too long, baby. She goes, it's bleeding. He goes, yeah, it really stings. So a moment of clarity.
Right.
She goes, is that an old one that you had to? He goes, yeah, I had to push through really hard. It sort of feels like, she goes, yeah, they heal over. He goes, yeah, it was healed over. I think it's just an open sore now. And so there's blood on it. We cut away and see Tim and Rachel sort of flirting. But then it's Dawn and David talking again. And David's like, what are you looking at? And she's like, I'm not looking at anything, because she was watching them.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you know those people that came in, Ray and Jude? That they met with me? She's like, yeah. He turns to the camera and he goes, they do sort of a training seminars and use expert speakers, don't they? They're using me for my, and then Dawn goes, expertise? He goes, yeah. He goes, for the good news for you young ladies that you're involved too. She's like, how? He goes, well, I'm doing one tonight and I'm getting quite a bit of money for it. It's a bit gauche, 300 quid. So I need someone to carry my bag or something. She goes, well, he goes, 100 quid for an hour's work tonight. And she goes, 100 for an hour? He goes, 80. She goes, you said 100. He goes, 90. She goes, you said 100. He goes, all right, then get there early for that kind of, you know, money. And he goes, that's silly money for that. I should have.
regrets that.
Yeah, he could have probably got her for 50.
Right.
He's basically talking to the camera now, talking about how he's really excited, and he's had cards made for this thing. They say, David Brent, assertive and guidance training in business. If it's in you, I'll find it. He goes, because that's what I do. You know, I go along and I just point out what you've already got. I'm like a spiritual guide. The reason I put, if it's in you, I'll find it, because if I've wasted good time and money looking for it and I can see it's definitely not in you, I don't want to be sued because you haven't got it. So you're not going to get me on that one. Tim and Rachel are still kissing in the hallway. It's like, get over yourselves, you weirdos.
Yeah. So uncomfortable.
Yeah. And Gareth sees them. He's like, what's going on here? Tim goes, what does it look like? And Gareth goes, how long has this been going on? He goes, when were you going to tell me? I can't believe you get off with a bird that I fancy. Tim goes, why can't you believe that, Gareth? Gareth goes, well, I can't believe there's a bird that fancies you over me for start. What are you? And he goes to Rachel, he's a weird little bloke. Look at his cartoon face and his hair. He looks like a Fisher Price man. His rubbish clothes. Makes me think there's something wrong with you. And he's like pointing at her. He goes, but yet in my head, I'd still do you. So I'm confused. He's like, so I'm just going to ask you straight. Is there anything that could happen between us two while this is going on? And once again, she's the best because she never tells him off. She's like what?
Yeah, let's find out where this goes.
Yeah. He goes, what specifically? She goes, yeah. And he thinks for a second. He goes, hand job? And he goes, look, don't answer right now. Think about it. And he walks away. Tim goes, you think I look like a Fisher Price man? She goes, yeah. He goes, what? Don't say that. He kind of does.
Yes. That was a weird moment of cleverness on Garrett's part. With his rubbish clothes and his haircut and funny face.
Yeah. Tim walks past Dawn's office or desk, and tells him that there's the computer guys at his favorite computer geeks at his desk. He's like, oh, Jesus. He walks up and he goes, all right, Simon, how's it going? What are you doing with my computer? And Simon is the computer guy. He goes, well, it's not your computer, is it? It's Wernham Hogg's. He goes, right. So what are you doing with Wernham Hogg's computer? Simon goes, you don't need to know. And Tim's like, no, I don't need to know, but could you tell me anyway? Simon goes, I'm installing a firewall. And Tim's like, okay, well, what is that? Simon goes, it protects your computers against script kiddies, data collectors, viruses, worms, Trojan horses, and it limits your outbound internet communications. Any more questions? Tim's like, yes. How long is this going to take? And then Simon gives the complete dickhead answer, you know? It'll take as long as it takes.
Yeah. Well, first he says, why? Do you want to do it yourself?
Oh, yeah. No, I can't do it myself. Oh, it'll take as long as it takes. Yeah. Which, that's a great answer.
Yeah. We learn a lot about Simon in a very short amount of time.
Yeah. And Tim goes, right. So how long did it take you to do this last time? Simon goes, it's done. He goes, I'm going to switch it off. And when it comes back on, it will ask you to click yes, no, or cancel. Hit cancel. Do not hit yes or no. Tim goes, right. And Simon goes, did you hear what I said? And Tim goes, yeah. He goes, what did I say? Hit cancel. Yeah, good. Now we go to David in his office, and he's talking to the camera, and he basically explains that he's an educator. He's a motivator of people. He excites their imaginations. It's like Bloody Dead Poet Society sometimes out there. You know, at the end when they stand on the tables, like I wouldn't want them to stand on the tables literally because of health and safety issues. But my point is life's about communication. We live 3 score and 10 and it's, did I communicate? Yes, I did. Did I get something across? Yes, I did. Are you going to pay me for it? Yes, lots. Thanks very much. Not why I do it, but thank you. So 3 score and 10, that's 70.
Yeah, good job. What was the Gettysburg Address?
4 score and 7 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I remember learning that when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know what that means. Scores.
Yeah.
So now Simon and Gareth are at the desk, and Tim is sitting, you know, at his desk, and Simon's installing the stuff in Gareth's desk, and Gareth goes, going go-karting again on the weekends with the lads? And Simon goes, oh, yeah, it's Supercarts? And Gareth goes, yeah. Simon goes, you any good? Gareth goes, came in first last time. I went 851 and got a certificate. And then he points at the certificate that he has hanging up. Simon goes, yeah, well, I went down the first day it opened and I did a couple of laps and I pulled over and the bloke that runs the thing came over and he says, oi, no professionals. I took my helmet off and I said, I'm not a professional. He said, you're not a professional? And I was like, no. He goes, well, you should be. If I was you, I'd take up Formula One. And if you drive like that, you'll probably be the best in the country. And I said, not interested. I'm making shitloads out of computers. Gareth goes, have you ever had a go at it at the Speedway? Simon goes, have you? Gareth goes, yeah. And then Simon goes, right. Well, I was doing it once, and I was bombing it bombing it around, and some idiot left a ramp thing out. And Tim goes, litter bugs.
Yeah. And Tim is just watching this whole exchange.
Yeah.
Like, what in the hell is going on right here?
Simon goes, I can see people were going, oh, my God, if that guy hits that ramp, Going at that speed, he's definitely dead. I hit the ramp. I took off in the air. I turned over in the air, and they were like, yeah. And they were going, well, he's definitely dead now. And I landed on my wheels, pulled over, and said, what were you worried about? that's only a story that Gareth would believe. Right. So then Neil and Dawn are, Neil's talking to Dawn at her desk, and David walks up and he's like, what's going on here? And Dave and Neil goes, David, Dawn tells me you're shutting down reception at 5. And David goes, well, just half hour early today. Neil goes, do you think it can run okay without her? David goes, yeah, phones will go straight to them and they can answer their own phones. And then they can do their own post tonight, just this once. And Neil goes, well, good. So we can probably just lose her altogether then, can't we? And David's like, what do you mean? Neil goes, well, if you don't need a receptionist, we may as well let her go. Either she's needed or she's not. David goes, we do need a receptionist. And Neil goes, my point is, David, you haven't put in a system in place. For your own needs, you've told Dawn to shut down reception at 5. You haven't told these people they can pick up the phone if it rings. And I mean, does Dawn know that they can do their own post? This is getting a little too deep into actual work. Yeah. And then David turns to Dawn. He goes, Dawn, they can do their own posts tonight. And Dawn goes, okay. Neil goes, it's no use telling her now. You know, basically he's just saying he's chewing him out a bunch.
Yes.
And David goes, all right, chill out. Don't have a cow, mate. And Neil goes, don't talk to me like you've forgotten who's in charge here. Let me remind you, I'm your boss. Okay. And David's like, yes. And then Neil says, let's try to think things through. And he walks off. And then David turns to Dawn and he goes, that was your fault. Oh, I took the rap for you again.
Oh, man. Fucking just such an awful person. And just, and we know that. Right. And yet it never ceases to shock me.
Yeah. Neil is definitely ramping up his...
holding David accountable.
Yeah, and just the tension he's creating. Yeah. Before, he was trying to make David feel better.
Yes.
Afterwards, now he's just like letting him have it.
Yeah.
We're back to Simon and Gareth and Tim, and Simon's still working on the computer.
Do you know some Simons?
In my life? Sure. Yeah. For sure.
Just like that nerd who just like knows everything.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to point out everything that you get factually wrong in a thing.
Right.
Oh, man.
So that's what Simon says. Right when Bruce Lee was filming, one of the extras came over and started a fight. Gareth goes, oh yeah, I know this. He was amazing at Kung Fu. But Bruce Lee just did a roundhouse on him. And Simon goes, well, no, he smashed him through a wall. And instead of firing, he said, go back to where you were and let's get to work on this film. And then Tim goes, man, those cats were fast as light. So that's from the song Kung Fu Fighting.
Oh, is it?
Was Kung Fu Fighting.
Oh, man, that's a good reference.
Those cats were fast as lightning.
Oh, I would have never gotten that one. That's a good one. Yeah, I thought it was just like Tim, just like being the old Muppet guys, you know, just talking from the peanut gallery, just right. saying stupid shit.
Gareth goes, you know, when he was fighting Chuck Norris in Enter the Dragon... Simon goes, no.
Oh, man.
Gareth goes, you haven't seen that? And Simon goes, no. You have not? I can't. Yeah, that's a classic. And Simon goes, no, I have not seen him fight Chuck Norris in Enter the Dragon. I've seen him fight Chuck Norris in Way of the Dragon. Gareth goes, oh, yeah, that's what I meant. And Simon goes, oh, is it? Why did you say you'd see him fighting Chuck Norris in Enter the Dragon then? He fights Bob Wall in both, but he only fights Chuck Norris in Way of the Dragon. And Gareth's like, yeah, I know. So when he was fighting Chuck Norris, and Simon goes, in what? Gareth goes, Way of the Dragon. Correct, at last. You know, Bruce Lee's not really dead, you know. This is Simon talking. He goes, it's in a book. What he did was he faked his own death so he could work undercover for the Hong Kong police, infiltrating drug gangs and the triads. And Gareth goes, yeah, I reckon that's true. And Tim goes, yeah, I reckon that's true. Because if you're going to send someone undercover to investigate the triads, you'd probably want the world's most famous Chinese film star. And Rachel had come over to his desk at that point. And Simon goes, oh, you gone off Dawn now, have you? And Rachel goes, what? And Tim goes, what? Shut up. And you can see he gets super uncomfortable fast. Now they're at the reception, and Dawn and Lee are chatting. And Tim walks by. Lee says to Tim, he goes, oh, you shagged her yet or what? And Tim goes, what? He goes, your bird, what's her name? And Don goes, it's Rachel. He goes, yeah, Rachel, have you done her yet or what? And Don goes, of course he hasn't. And I think that's just wishful thinking.
Yes.
Tim's like super uncomfortable. He's like, oh, come on, Lee, I don't kiss and tell. And Lee goes, I bet you bloody have, haven't you? And Tim kind of like does the thing where he zips his lip and he goes, lips are sealed, puts his hands up. He's like, don't ask me. And he kind of walks out. And Lee turns to Donna. He goes, he's done well there. She's like, what do you mean, well? And Lee's like, well, she's tasty. She's nice. Don goes, you don't even know her. Lee goes, yeah, but I mean, she's very attractive. And Don's like, well, she's not very attractive. And then there's some tension building there.
Yeah.
So now we're in David's office, and Gareth is helping him rehearse his speech. David says he thinks that Ray will introduce him, and he'll come out and do he'll do a few gags. You have to be thick-skinned in business. It doesn't matter if you're the T-boy or the general manager. People will try to rock your confidence and shake your spirit. Don't listen to them. So let's try a little exercise. Then I'll go into the audience and pick someone at random. And I go, sir, what's your name? And he points at Gareth, and Gareth goes, Gareth stares at him, and he goes, say your name. Gareth goes, Leroy. David's like, where does Leroy come from? And then Gareth says he was in the TV show Fame. Yes,
the person of color. He does not say person of color.
He does not call him person of color.
Person of color in Fame. Yes.
Yeah. David goes, well, just use your own name. And Gareth goes, oh, Gareth. David goes, hi, Gareth, insult me. Let me show you that sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Just throw some insults at me, and I'll show you how to roll with the punches. Gareth goes, the Swindon lot don't seem to respect you. He goes, David's like, why would you say that? They don't even know me. They're not going to know that, and it's not true. Do something else. Gareth goes, people are laughing at the heels on your shoes. David goes, well, I'm not going to be wearing these shoes, am I? Gareth goes, are you going to be wearing that earring? He goes, what, are they having a go at that too? Gareth goes, well, some people are. And David's like, what else? And Gareth goes, well, they've given you a nickname. And David goes, the Swindon lot? He goes, yeah, but everybody's using it. Gareth says it. And Gareth doesn't want to give up what it is. And finally, David talks him into it, and he goes, it's Bluto. David goes, the villain from Popeye? And Gareth is like, yeah. David goes, is it because of the beard? He goes, no, it's because, and he puts his hands out like making a gesture.
Like and a fat guy.
Puffs his cheeks out like, you know, it's because you're fat. David's like, what is that? I can't believe this. And he goes to the door and Gareth's like, hey, wait, don't. You know, basically like, I trusted you with this. And then David breaks out into the office and he's like, sorry, everyone. We're one big happy family here. And I've been trying to welcome you new guys. He says, I didn't want you here, but now you're here. So he's basically saying,
this was forced on me.
Yeah, I'm doing my best with something I didn't want to do. He's like, but you're here now, so welcome. Well done. And if there's one thing I don't like, it's nicknames, because nicknames are bad, not helpful. They can be very hurtful. Not to me. It's like a water off a duck's back, you know, to him. It doesn't bother him at all. And some guy goes, you used to call Malcolm Kojak. And David goes, that was affectionate. He was a great detective and a fine actor. Somebody else goes, well, maybe Mr. Toad's affectionate. And David goes, who's Mr. Toad? And Gareth goes, well, some people call you that as well. David goes, I thought I was Bluto. And Gareth goes, yeah, Bluto and Mr. Toad. David's like, why am I Mr. Toad? And some guy makes a fat person gesture to him again. And David's like, there's that face again. You know, that's body fascism is what it is. A toad is the ugliest of all amphibians. If we're handing out insults to someone for being fat, let's have a go at him. And he points at Keith. Oh, Keith just stands there like he doesn't care. He's like, look at him. He's got glasses, four eyes as well. Why don't we call him Fatty, Fatty Toad Boy? And if we're at least to start on him and then move on to Mr. Toad, that's
kind of... He just sort of gives up.
Yeah.
He just quits mid-sentence. He just goes, I can't.
Yeah.
And walks off.
Now Neil's hanging out with the Swindon group at their desks, and he's asking them how things are going.
It's probably worth noting that this whole thing started out with David talking about how words will never hurt him. And then immediately, like, all it took was one insult to, like, fucking tear him apart.
Yep, that's true. So now Neil's talking to the Swindon group at their desks, and he's like, how's everything going? And they're like, oh, you know, everything's okay. He's like, how about you, Brenda? She's the woman in the wheelchair. She goes, yeah, it's okay. I didn't get my wages through again. And he's like, did you not? Really? He goes, did you tell David? She goes, yeah, I told him in time. And he goes, I'm sorry about that. And he's like, I'm going to go get this sorted out. And she's like, well, you know, don't worry about it. And he's like, no, it's fine. And he kind of walks off with a purpose. So he goes into David's office, and David's doing sit-ups, and Gareth is holding his ankles. Neil goes, working hard. David goes, working out, fit body and fit mind. Neil goes, good. Here's a couple things. Gareth's standing next to him, like, doing some kind of cool-down moves or something. He goes, did you do your wages, or did your wages go through this month to David? And David's like, yeah. And Neil goes, did yours, Gareth? And Gareth is like, yeah, fine. Neil goes, good. So you two are okay. Phew. He goes, but why has one of your team come to me saying that they haven't been paid this month? And David just kind of like looks awkwardly like, Then we go to an interview with David, and he's like, you know, he fears my methods because he doesn't understand my methods. Human nature, the unknown. Sure. But you relax, you know. I don't want all of this. What are you doing? How are you going to do it? Judge me by my results. So now we're back to David's office. Neil's, you know, really giving it to him now. He's kind of taking off the gloves, I would say. He's like, yeah, this isn't the first time you've forgotten something important, and it's not the first time this week. And it worries me when someone feels like they have to go over your head and come to me. And David goes, snitches.
Oh, God.
Which is, she didn't go over his head. No. Like, she was on her own, and Neil asked her.
Yes.
David goes, snitches. Yeah,
if you're not getting paid.
Yeah, that's the important part.
You gotta take it somewhere.
That's the important part about work. Neil goes, you know, I've never seen you write anything down. You've got two computers, and I don't even know what you use them for. You've got some sort of system? And then David taps his head, and he goes, it's all up here. And Neil goes, yeah, but it's not all up there, is it? And David goes, well, most of it is. Neil goes, look, David, I'll tell you now, when I was managing the Swindon branch, our perception of your branch is they're having a laugh. And David goes, well, thanks very much.
Yes, that was a compliment.
Yeah. And David goes, not in a good way, having a laugh, mucking around at the expense of Wernham Hogg. And David goes, well, who's to say that if we weren't mucking around, having a laugh all the time, it wouldn't be much worse? Neil goes, I'm not interested in that, David. I get the impression that you'd rather be popular than steer the ship in the right direction. And David goes, rubbish. And I resent that accusation because this branch has performed very well. And Neil's like, it's performed okay, and I want it to perform a lot better. And then David goes, well, there you go. What's better? Because I could show you a graph of people versus task, and where does the line go? And then Neil's like, the line goes where I want it to go. And basically he's just telling him he wants him to, you know, step it up because you're not getting the job done.
Yeah, this is very sort of like office lingo heavy episode.
Yeah. Yeah, they start talking about stuff that.
Yeah.
There's some stuff in this one that just wasn't that interesting to me, like that kind of stuff. You could have cut the fat.
Yes.
Neil says, with respect, he goes, you know, I'm aware of this management training that you're doing tonight, and I'm afraid it's going to affect your performance here at work. And David goes, well, that's extracurricular. Some people play golf. Neil goes, I play golf. And David goes, well, there you go. And Neil goes, but I'm performing as I want me to perform. You're not performing as I want you to perform. And then David's like, I'm performing as I want me to perform. And this is such a word salad.
Yes.
Neil goes, I don't want you to perform like that. David goes, it's a good performance. Let's agree to disagree. Neil goes, let's not agree to disagree. Or he goes, no, let's agree that you disagree with me. Jesus. David goes, ooh, you're hard, showing off. And he kind of like leans, and he kind of nods towards the camera.
Yeah, like Neil just grandstanding for the audience.
Mm-hmm. Neil goes, I think I made my point. I'll see you later. And then David and Gareth are sitting silently, and Gareth comes up behind him and starts massaging his neck. And David is uncomfortable, but it feels good.
Right.
You can tell. He doesn't want him to do it, but he doesn't want him to stop either.
Right.
He starts doing the little karate chaps on his back, and David's like, what are you doing? And Gareth goes, you looked a bit tense. And David goes, well, I am with him. Gareth goes, doesn't that feel nice? And David goes, yeah, but... And then he points at the camera. And he goes, Gareth goes, we should still do, should we do some more work on your abs? And David's like, not now. So now they're at the reception, and Dawn is looking at Tim, and she walks over to him, and she's like, is he ready yet? And Tim's like, who? And David, and Dawn goes, David. And Tim's like, oh, I don't know. Dawn goes, so what are you doing tonight? Tim goes, I think we're going to the pub. Dawn goes, we? And Tim goes, yeah, me and Rachel, for a couple of pints. She goes, well, think of me stuck with, and she points at David's office, and she goes, and stuck with him. And she goes, you should come for a laugh. And he goes, oh, I better stay out of that. And she goes, yeah, definitely wise. And she goes, all right, babes. So she calls him babe. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like, they're holding hands, kind of.
Oh, I missed that.
And she turns to go over to David's office. And as she goes over, she turns around and comes back out with this, like, look on her face, like, oh, my God. He comes out, and he's wearing, like, this white T-shirt with, like, the neck is too big. The neck hole's too big in it. And he's wearing, like, jeans and a baseball hat backwards. Oh. And it's just the dumbest look ever. And David goes, see you later. Wish us luck on our date. It's not a date, is it? He goes, she's got a boyfriend, and I'm paying her. He goes, what sort of date would that be? I think you know, and at $100, you know what I'd get for that. But, you know, everything, he's like, everything I imagine. And he goes, but I'm not imagining anything, any bit of it. Because, you know, and then he drops the bags. He's like, basically pinned himself into a corner talking about how he right. is thinking about having sex with Dawn for $100.
Yeah, paying her to have sex.
Yeah. And then she's like, pick that up there. Or he goes, carry that. That's what you're being paid for. And he walks off. And so then she has to pick up this giant bag of shit.
Yeah, it's just like a giant, like, 3-foot duffel bag full of something we don't know what.
Right.
And he's just going to give a speech. Why are you taking a duffel bag?
Right.
Go give a speech.
Why are you dressed like that right. when you're doing a speech about business? We're at the community center, and Ray and Jude are there, and David walks in and lets the door swing shut on Dawn as she's carrying all that heavy shit. And now they're in some room, and David's like airboxing and shadow boxing.
Yeah, he's getting ready for the show.
Yeah. That always reminds me when I first started doing comedy, there's this guy who everybody hated. Before shows, he'd be in the back pacing and shadow boxing and stuff like that.
Just for an open mic?
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
It was just for show, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was just so everybody else could see him and be like, oh, yeah, this is how you get ready.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know, you know, we were all new. And we're
right. Okay. Step one, shadow box.
Yeah.
Step two, sign up for open mic.
Sometimes you gotta, sometimes you're in for the fight of your life out there, dude.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you start a 5-minute veteran bit.
Yeah.
And it goes nowhere, and you realize life isn't worth living anymore.
Yeah.
Unless you shadow box first, and you know you can you can beat the demons through shadow boxing.
It's funny to think about, like, what I've seen people do. Like, I think I saw, I definitely saw somebody doing push-ups before.
Oh, jeez. There's always people pacing, a lot of pacing before people get up on stage.
Yeah, I do that sometimes, depending. Sometimes I'll, like, running through, like, how I want to do something in my head. So I'll walk away from everybody so I can think about it.
Yeah.
So it looks like pacing, but I'm just trying to get away from everybody. So that Ray tells him that there's 3 other people on the lineup, and they've done it before. So he's basically explaining to him how this is going to work. He's like, I'll introduce you when they get here. And David's like, man, I love being backstage. And it wasn't backstage. It was just a room.
Right. Yeah, they're in like a cafeteria or something at a community center.
Right. And then Ray's like, can we take a photo for the website and the newsletter? And David's like, yeah, no problem. Do you need to take a light reading? And the guy holds up like a disposable camera. And he's like, I think we'll be fine. And so then David, like, you see the guy and he holds up the camera to take his picture. And the guy's like, looks, and then it pans over to David, and he's got like 1 foot up on the table, and he's like leaned forward. Yeah.
We got the sticker from, Dave.
Yeah.
With a drawing of David Brent in his blue jeans and T-shirt, leaning back on the table.
Yeah, so that's the next thing we go, Ray's like, maybe a little more relaxed than that. And so then we go back to Ray, and he holds the camera up, and then puts it down again, and then David Brent's like laying across the table, like with his legs spread, and he's like, I don't know about that one either. And then he's like, so then David like spins around and is like leaning forward with his feet kicking up in the air, and he's like, maybe just some.
Yeah, he thinks he's at like a Vogue photo shoot.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
We just want a headshot. We just want a picture of your face. That's it.
Right. So he goes, maybe if you just like sit down. So then David's like, okay. And he jumps up, grabs a chair to sit down in, and then like spins the chair around it and sits on it backwards like Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds. And then he does like this thing where he frames his face with his hands like a Vogue kind of
Madonna Vogue move.
Yeah. Finally, they just take his picture.
Just give up. This is not going to get better.
Right. And then there's two guys that are in like a break room. David walks in. He goes, are you guys talking at this gig as well? And the guy goes, yeah, just having a sneaky joint first. And so David's like, partially decriminalized now anyway, isn't it? He goes, what is that, skunk? And the guy goes, it's just weed. He goes, do you want some? And David's like, no. Nah. He goes, I'm on a diet. And when I get wasted, I go to Munchie City. He goes, I'm mad enough without the gear, so I'll take a rain check. And then he goes, catch you later. And he walks out.
Gives him the finger guns.
Yeah. And then he tells him to chill, right?
Yeah.
So now we go to this little seminar that they're having, and there's people sitting in chairs.
Yeah, just like folding chairs.
Yeah, so there's probably like 25 people in there, and they probably all paid...
too much money.
Yeah, paid $100 or £100 to do this thing. So basically, Ray's explaining to them what's going on, and he says, we'll start with Mark Found from Sound Investments, and this guy gets up and just starts doing some business talk, and the next guy and finally the guy, Ray gets back up, and he goes, now some words of advice on motivational techniques from Warnham Hoggs, Mr. David Brent, and all the other people that are in this thing are all wearing, like, suits, and the people that are in the audience are... I don't know, a vast array of like different kinds of people. Some are businessy looking, some are not, you know. I wouldn't say that they were 20 somethings though, which is what they were described as. So David gets up and he's wearing his baseball hat and his jeans and his t-shirt, and he gets up on stage and he takes the hat and whips it off and throws it like a frisbee at Dawn and hits her in the head. And then he just sort of like hawks around the stage. And then he goes over and he throws open the door and he goes, get out. Go on. And everybody's like looking at him. He's like, I've opened the door for you. If you don't want to make it a go, then go. Save us all a bit of time if you don't think you can cut it. And everybody just sits there and he goes, no? Good. And then he starts to close the door. And like a janitor starts walking in and is like, are you finished in here? He's like, no. So then he goes on and he just starts giving this business speech and he goes, you know, you're all looking at me and you're going, well, you're a success. You've achieved your goals. You've reaped the rewards. Sure. But oi, Brent, is all you care about is chasing the Yankee dollar? Let me show you something I always keep with me. And he pulls out this little book and he's like, it's just a little book called of Collected Meditations. It's a collection of philosophers, writers, thinkers, Native American wisdom. It's really showing you that the spiritual side needs as much care and attention as the physical side. It's about feeding the soul, evolving spirituality, and it's got a foreword by Duncan Goodhue. So I said this before, like, he's saying the right thing there, I think. Mm-hmm, that's good advice.
Yes. Yeah.
But he's so off-putting that nobody cares.
It's like if you go to Lone Tree and the first joke you make is that the Lone Tree the one where you hang people?
Yeah, right.
You've already lost the crowd once you take off your hat and flicked it across the room and hit somebody in the head with it.
Right. Yeah. By the way, Duncan Goodhue, the guy who wrote the foreword, he's a former an English competitive swimmer.
Huh.
Competed at North Carolina State in the United States.
Oh, wow.
As an Olympic swimmer for Great Britain and won the Olympic gold and bronze medals in 1980.
Hmm.
So apparently he's spiritual too.
Yes.
So he goes on and on about that kind of stuff. And then he talks about how he's in his 30s, but so what? At least I've got my health. And if you haven't gotten your health, you know, maybe you've got one leg. At least you haven't gotten two legs missing. And if you lost both legs and both arms, and you just at least go, well, at least I'm not dead. Although I'd rather be dead in that situation, to be honest. I'm not saying people like that should be put down. I'm just saying that in my life, I would rather not live without arms and legs because I'm just, you know, I'm getting into yoga and stuff.
I do like the quote he reads from the book.
Okay.
So if all men were to bring their miseries together in one place, most would be glad to take each his own home again rather than take a portion out of the common stock.
Wow.
So yeah. Just like...
more good advice.
Yeah. We tend to be happy with our own lot, you know, when faced with change. So I run a change group at the library, and then we just talk like, how do you go through change? Like, how do you identify behaviors? Mm-hmm. And so I use this quote that I came across one time, and this is what this reminded me of. We prefer the certainty of misery to the misery of uncertainty. We will stay in like terrible positions and keep doing terrible things because we know, because it feels comfortable, rather than take a chance and try to change it to, because we don't know what the outcome of that will be.
Mm, the devil you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what that quote reminded me of.
Yeah. More good advice.
Thank you, David Brent.
Yeah, you've really opened my mind. So now David goes, are you familiar with the term laughter is the best medicine? Well, it's true. When you laugh, your brain releases endorphins, your stress hormones are reduced, and the oxygen supply to your blood is increased. So you feel, I try and laugh several times a day, just because it makes you feel great. So let's try that. Once again, good advice. Mm-hmm. But you can't just laugh.
Right.
And then he starts laughing. And he's laughing like hysterically.
Yes.
And then he's like, come on, trust me. And nobody joins in. They all just sit there and stare at him. And the best part is, it's shot from the side, so you see Dawn, and she's just sitting there kind of like looking at him like,
what is going on?
Yeah, but almost like judgmentally, like, I'm disgusted by this somehow, too. And she goes, and then we have an interview with her, and she goes, I'd be lying if I said my life turned out exactly as I expected.
which is a great cutaway.
Yeah. She goes, my old school just recently had a school reunion, which I didn't go to, but one girl in my class turns out that she's now running her own internet auction website, making a fortune, and is happily married to a marine biologist, and she used to eat chalk.
Oh, man. So the other thing this reminded me, so you haven't watched I Think You Should Leave, which is like the sketch show on... the Tim Robinson sketch show. And so there's one of my favorite sketches. So it's like a Claire's commercial, and it's like a bunch of little girls, and they're, you know, talking about going to get their ear pierced, and how they're worried about it. And then there's like a 65-year-old guy, and he just comes on, and he just like, he's like, yeah, I wanted to get my ear pierced before I went to Florida. And so that's like the setup of it. And so they just keep cutting back between the girls and him talking about their fears of getting their ear pierced. And then it just like goes so dark. And he goes, you know, and then it's just this old guy like having a monologue and goes, you know, they say if you, when you die, that you see everything that happened to you. And what I do is every day for 10 minutes, I just sit in the room and I just laugh. And I just laugh and laugh and laugh. How sad is that? I'm sitting in the room trying to convince my dead self that I had a good life. Oh, it's so funny.
I love it. I'm trying to convince myself I had a good life.
Oh, man.
Oh, so...
Sorry about that tangent.
I liked it. Okay, so... and then he's... so then we get to the end of the thing, and he's like, that's about it from yours truly. Thanks for taking all I had to throw at you. I'm spent, but I'm going to make like a banana and split. And no one laughs, of course. And then he points at somebody and goes, he got it. Or before I go, promise me you'll remember just one thing. Just remember, and then he pushes a button on the radio, and Simply the Best by Tina Turner starts cranking out, and he starts jumping around and dancing up front and trying to get everybody to clap along with it. And he goes, I've been David Brent, and you've been the best. And he, like, runs out of the room. And so he runs out of the room, and then after, like, a few seconds, Jude stands up and turns the music off, and he comes back in. Or no, she goes, oh, thanks to David. And he sticks his head back in, and he goes, who stopped the music? And she's like, well, I did. And he goes, don't stop it. Leave it going to the end, you know, till I, you know, don't do that next time. She's like, okay. And so then they get backstage into that room, and David is back there, and he's pretty excited about his performance. And he peels his shirt off.
Oh, jeez.
He goes, I'll let you on a little secret right now. Before I went out there, I was worried whether I still had it. I'll let you be the judge of that. And he, like, hi.
Oh, I will be.
He high-fives Dawn and, like, really hard. He throws his, like, sweaty shirt at Dawn. And David goes, Tina, a bit too much for you? And because Ray and Jude come walking in. Ray's like, possibly. And David goes, well, that's your job to hold me back, because when I'm out there, I am whooey. He goes, and it's just like, so that's up to you, I'm afraid, you know. And then he's spraying deodorant on, and he sprays it, and it just, like, dawns behind him. He sprays it in her face, like, through his armpit right. into her face. And then he's like, so, what did you think to Jude? And she's like, well, my tastes are pretty traditional. And he goes, oh, yeah, a little too rock and roll for you? She goes, possibly. David goes, to each his own. But I better warn you now, that was me on a 7. Then Ray hands him a check, and he goes, well, there's your check. And David's like, well, thank you. More importantly, what pub are we going to? He goes, you know, and basically he offers to buy everybody's drinks, mm-hmm. and he's like, doing some air boxing, and he's like, you know, it's on me. And they're like, oh, I think we're just gonna grab some food and go home, is what Ray says. And David goes, yeah, pizza. He goes, like, never mind Pizza Express, what about the Beer Express? Next stop, drunkenness. And he's running the
he's so, like, pumped,
yeah,
after having done nothing.
Yeah, he does a lot of hand motions, which is always hard to convey. Yes. Yeah. And then he's like, where do you guys want to go? Chinese, Indian, you know, as long as it's on me. He goes, here we go, the Three Musketeers. So apparently Dawn's not invited. And then they walk out and they leave Dawn in there to clean up all the shit. And as they get outside the door, Jude goes, oh, wait, I just remembered, I can't. And Ray goes, what do you mean? She goes, I just remembered, I've got to go do a... And David goes, oh, just the two of us. He goes, where are the clubs at around here anyway? And Ray goes, I am not going to a club. David goes, you bloody are.
Jeez.
And then you see Dawn walking out carrying David's stuff. And, like, I don't know if you noticed, she's got, like, the boombox, and, like, the cord from it is just dragging on the floor. She's And that's the end.
David keeps ramping up. Man.
Yeah.
Jeez. Get more and more David-y with every episode.
Yeah. Well, I watched the next episode already.
No. Oh.
A little turn of events that kind of brings him back to reality.
Yeah. I sort of remember the premise just slightly. What's the next one called? Do we know?
Charity. Yeah, so that one's called Charity because they're doing, like, a fundraiser for starving children. It seems to be a big focal point in the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
raising money for We Come All.
Yeah, right. So I mean, I don't know if this is just a thought I had, but, you know, I think Great Britain or England has had to deal with questions of colonialism mm-hmm. in a way that other countries have not,
yeah.
and have had to think about, like, the impact that they've had, you know, around the world.
Right.
So, I don't know, 150 years they were the global power and very violently took over other cultures and societies, and
such a small,
it's such a small place,
yeah.
to have to take over the world,
yeah.
But, yeah, it's weird, but that's why they play cricket in England or in India, I guess.
Yes.
So
and the Falkland Islands.
Yeah, and the Falkland Islands. Yeah, it all comes out of the wash. You know, sure, we destroyed your culture, but we gave you
cricket.
So it's even, really.
Pretty much. All right.
Well, this was a fun one.
Weird as shit.
All right. Hey, you've been listening to Wes and Mike. Watch your time. Here, let me take a picture of you doing that. Hold on one sec. This is going on the Instagram sure.
Okay.
Hey, you've been listening to Wes and Mike Waste Time Watching TV, Season 5, Episode 10.
Yeah, let's David Brent next time. Oof.